Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. Working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is. All right, thank you for that. I love that introduction. That's my son. In case you guys don't know, that's my son. I wrote it for him, but you know. Maybe he'll become a writer someday. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. I'm broadcasting live out of Chicago, Illinois. Folks, it is great. It's wonderful. What I mean like that, it's a wonderful day. It's a wonderful looking day. Although we've had some really, really bad news on the terror in Europe once more. First it was Paris, now it's Brussels, and we're going to be talking about that a little later on in the show. But hey, glad you're here. Glad, sit back, relax, call in. If not, just relax and just enjoy the show. And it should be a good one, as always. All right, we're in Chicago, as always. I love doing this show out of Chicago. Chicago's a wonderful city. Don't believe everything you hear. Don't believe the hype. It's a beautiful place. If you don't believe that, then come here and find that out, okay? Oh, great. You're listening to George Wilder Jr. on Blog Talk Radio, and I want to thank everybody for all their kind wishes. I want to thank you for your thoughts. I want to thank you for your feedback. I want to thank you for buying and downloading my stories, my ebooks, you know, whatever's up there in my name. I want to thank you for it. I want to thank all my friends on Facebook. Okay, it sounds like I'm accepting an Oscar, right? Thanking everybody. It feels that way sometimes, but all I'm doing is showing my appreciation for all of you out there, whether you're listening now or you're going to archive the show and listen later. That's one of the things about this radio show and some others, but especially my radio show, that you can always listen later, download it for later, and listen as many times as you want. I've been on the air for almost 2 years. It's coming up on 2 years. I'm coming up on my second anniversary, and I'm proud and I'm excited about that, and I enjoy what I'm doing because you are the ones out there to keep me doing what I'm doing. And you know, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. And that's the damn truth. And that's the way it is. And like I said before, the world is just such an awful place. I'm not going to, you know, even bite my tongue on that. It's an awful place. But you have to try to stay motivated. You have to try to stay, you have to keep smiling. You have to not worry about things you cannot control. And, you know, you just have to stay motivated. And we got to give those people who have lost their lives who have been severely hurt in Brussels and even in Paris, those terrorist attacks, we have to give them our prayers and we have to support them at a time like this. Because I'm sure if it happened over here in the United States, they would be supporting us. So we have to support them. And we have to find a way to take out this terrorist group, ISIS. For a while, I thought we had a handle on it, but apparently not. I mean, this was a cold, calculated, and prepared, you know, attack, just like the one in Paris, just like 9/11. I mean, this was just it reminds us to be vigilant. It reminds us to stay vigilant that everywhere we go, we may not make it back home, you know, so we have to stay vigilant. Pay attention to our surroundings, you know, and I always do that. I mean, when I'm walking down the street, man, I'm looking everywhere. Oh, who are you? you know what? What's that bag sitting over there? I'm always vigilant, and you should be vigilant too. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. My guest today is apparently not Antonia Hall, maybe the author. All right, let's go to the phones. All right, you're on the George Wilder. Hey, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Thank you for having me. Yes, this is author Antonia Hall.
Are you okay? Okay, I thought it was your representative, or
no, that's me.
Okay, it's you. Okay, I may be getting you confused with someone else. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
No worries. No worries. Here we are.
Okay. All right. But I do want to apologize at least for myself because I try to be accurate on these things. But you know, it's so many. I book so many people for the show. It's kind of, you know, you gotta keep. It's like dominoes sometimes. All right. Tell us about yourself.
Totally.
Tell us about yourself, Antonia Hall.
Yeah. So I'm the author of The Ultimate Guide to a Multi-Orgasmic Life.
Mm-hmm.
And that came out in February. It was already a bestseller on Amazon. And it's a guide to enriching our lives in every area, both in and out of the bedroom.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know.
Okay, I have something down here that says that Antonia Hall Communications, a public relations company providing services for authors, filmmakers, politicians, scholars, philanthropists, and other visionaries. Is that correct?
Yes, I am also a publicist, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you offer event planning and product launches. Can you tell us something about that?
Sure. So I promote authors. I book them on interviews, get them in media, print, that sort of thing.
Okay.
I've helped out with different events. I was also in Chicago for the third-party presidential debate. I was the publicist for that.
Oh,
it's
the
Chicago Hilton.
Mm. Oh, wow. That's great. That's wonderful. Did you enjoy Chicago?
I loved Chicago.
Me too.
It was
it gets such a bad rap, you know.
Does it really? Gets really? I've never heard that.
Well, I've read things and I've heard people say stuff, and you know, but you know, it's a beautiful city. It's a beautiful town, and it's a great place for tourism and all of those kinds of things. And it's beautiful. Okay, so
it
what
is
kind of
beautiful, and it was charming and lovely.
Oh yeah, yeah. What kind of services do you provide for authors? I mean, specifically.
Well, I promote authors, so garnering media attention.
Okay.
Yeah,
kind of
so getting reviews written in the press, both in print and electronic. Of course, so much has become digital, I'm sure you know.
Yes.
And garnering interviews, that sort of thing.
Okay. So you're sort of like an agent to some of these people.
I'm not an agent. I'm a publicist. So I promote.
Okay, you promote them. You promote them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And how would you promote a scholar?
Well, I've promoted scholars. It depends on the topic that they've written about or what their work is like. So it kind of varies by project.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah.
And, okay, you say you garnered media attention of your clients on top radio and television shows? That's interesting.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Influential newspapers, magazines, and blogs. You're really busy, aren't you?
I do keep very busy, yes. Especially now with the new book. I've been doing book touring with the book, and it's been really successful. I'm grateful.
Yes. So tell us a little bit more about the book.
So the book is a guide. It's a guide to everything that can be getting in the way. I'm sure you know, George. I mean, sexuality is a part of nature. We're all innately sexual beings. That's just part of being human and part of being a part of nature. And absolutely everything is sold with sex, but we're not supposed to talk about it. So a lot of us haven't been given the tools to really tap into our potential. And a lot of people don't know that both men and women can be multi-orgasmic. So I wrote a guide that helps people. It's very simple, little chapters, and then an exercise, and then a little chapter and an exercise, because we're all so busy, you know. But
yeah, yeah.
The Ultimate Guide to a Multi-Orgasmic Life is written so that people can read a little bit and incorporate it into their lives. It looks at all the different ways that things could be getting in the way of living your best life. So, you know, coming from an attitude of gratitude, and I'm sure you know that having an attitude of gratitude is transformative.
Have you incorporated any of your life experiences into this writing, into this book?
Oh, sure. So it was something that I studied, and it's funny, it started when I was living here in Los Angeles, and I was really stressed out. It's, you know, a very busy, hectic city, and I was looking for tools to kind of find, like, to de-stress. And the more I started using these tools, the more it was like there was this new flow to life. And I thought, well, what else should I be using that would help my life? And so it set me down this path of exploration. And the more that I researched it and studied it and incorporated these tools into my life, the more I saw that it carried over into every area of my life. And so when I went to grad school, I decided that that's what I wanted to study. So this was my focus there as well. And I've worked with different experts in this field, and incorporates like tantric and Taoist techniques and personal development techniques are all in there.
So what I like about it is that you, as an author, you as a sort of a motivator, you're taking your experiences and you trying to help others who may have gone, who may have gone through some of those issues.
Yes, absolutely. Because there are so many things that get in our way. We trip ourselves up. And I want everybody should be living their best life. Everybody should be experiencing the fullness and richness that it is available for us.
What kind of feelings do you get when you know that you've helped someone who actually needs it? From your book or from what your work that you do, you've helped someone. That's that must be a great feeling when you get positive feedback for that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I feel so grateful when I'm, because it also reinforces that I'm doing the right work for myself. So I was a personal development writer. I've written for magazines and newspapers. And I did that for maybe 6 or 7 years. And so I was already on that path as well. And I've gotten many letters from people. And it's so rewarding because it mirrors back that I'm doing the right work for myself. And that these tools really, really do work.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. As an author myself, as a radio host, it is so, when you know you're out there, you're helping people and you're getting that positive feedback, it makes you want to keep doing what you're doing because you're affecting lives positively in a positive way. And it makes you want to keep doing it. And because, like I've said before, I'm doing this radio show because of the people out there. They keep me on the air. You know, I mean, I keep coming back because of you. You know, and I always said to myself, and I said to other people, what do you put on this earth for if you can't help out somebody else who needs help?
Absolutely, George.
At something or other, you know, so and I always make it my mission to help people if I can, you know, if I can, if I have the ability to help someone, I'm going to, and if they show a need for legitimate help, I'm there, you know. It doesn't have to be monetary. It doesn't have to have any money involved. It can just be, you know, a simple hello or a simple how do you do, how you teach, show somebody something that they are looking to be shown, and you have that experience to help them out in that kind of a way, if I said that correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. totally understand where you're coming from. It's lovely.
Yeah. Do you have an excerpt of your book?
Do I have an excerpt of my book? It's funny. You started off about being grateful, and I had been looking at that as something to read for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you want me to read it?
Yeah, you can, whatever you have.
Okay.
Let people know what you, whatever you have.
Well, there are a lot of topics addressed in my book, but I think that gratitude is a nice one. And I know that gratitude may seem like quite the departure from having multiple orgasms, but orgasms are far more connected to your state of mind than
your
sex work.
Huh?
My mind is in the gutter. No, sexuality is a normal, healthy part of being human.
No, I use that. I'm just being facetious.
Yeah. Okay. It's been my experience that by staying in a state of gratitude, your life will begin to transform in incredible ways. There are many scientific studies that indicate that choosing to put one's focus on gratitude increases feelings of happiness. Thoughts of gratitude stimulate the hypothalamus, which is a key part of the brain in stress regulation. Grateful thinking can also stimulate the ventral tegmental area of the brain, which is where your pleasure sensations are. The effects of gratitude can not only transform one's life, but also allows for better relationships with others. The more you embrace life and the people in it with a creative and grateful attitude, the more you learn to trust yourself and the universe. Begin with an intention to consciously move your thoughts away from what's not working to things for which you can be grateful. We are all comprised of conscious energy in motion. When your energy focus shifts from what you don't want in your life to what you want more of, you'll begin to feel an attitude change both internally, where everything begins, and externally, which is a reflection of that inner world. This shift changes how you relate with the outside world. Embrace gratitude every chance possible, and you'll find the more gifts will be brought into your life. George, are you still there? George?
All right, we're back on the air. We had a little technical difficulty. I hope she calls back. Maybe she won't, but that's okay. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with me. I wanted to say my son is he's playing in his first it's an orchestra. It's a school orchestra, and he's out there. He's been practicing all week. He's been in his studio all week practicing, and now he gets to play in front of this Illinois Symphonic Orchestra, you know. And I'm proud of him for that. I am great. He's a smart guy. He's an intelligent guy. Just got his grades. I told him he has to bring them up. They're not, but anyway, he's a musician. He's not too much of a radio guy, but he is a musician. And I'm proud of that. I'm very proud of that. And I'm waiting for him to get home right now because he has to tell me a lot about what went on. He has to tell me a lot about what went on, and he is such a wonderful kid. He is such a wonderful kid. But you know what? You know what? I'm looking at this computer screen right here, and again, Tara in Europe, dozens dead. It's kind of eclipse of not much. It's kind of eclipse what my son is all about. And ISIS said it was us. ISIS claimed, I'm talking about this thing in Brussels, okay? As I was saying, talking about from the beginning of the show, Brussels nightmares just days after arrest of suspect Paris attacker. Yeah, they you know, this could have something to do with that. Okay, terror alert words raised to the highest level, not a knee-jerk reaction to terror raids. This is crazy. Let's see what it go on and see what it says. This is crazy. I will be right back, folks. Stay with me. I should just jump up and be right back. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. All right, ISIS is to blame for this attack in Brussels. It's ISIS, no one else. They've attacked it. They've attacked airport and the train stations in Brussels. There were three explosions. Worst fears realized after months on high terror alert. This is crazy. Okay, and we all should be giving a moment of silence. A moment of silence to the people who have been, as I've said at the beginning of the show, the people who have been killed and the people who have been hurt. My understanding is about 30 dead and 100 hurt. And ISIS is taking the blame. So I'm going to, if they want to take the blame, we're going to say that this was perpetrated by ISIS because these guys want to take the blame. So if they want to take the blame, let them take the blame. Okay? Take it, ISIS. Okay, I remember a few months back, United States bomber planes, jet planes, and a few of the allies of the United States, these guys were bombing the hell out of ISIS in Iraq and Syria. And in some cases, we were told that ISIS had been contained. We were told that ISIS is not contained. And I say I'm only calling Obama a failure because ISIS is not contained. I am not blaming this on Obama. No ways. I mean, I've said this before and people, well, George, you're blaming Obama. No, I'm not. It was Obama who was bombing ISIS over in Syria. And it was his administration, I believe, that came out and said ISIS was contained. ISIS maybe will never be contained. They have to be destroyed. They cannot be contained. These people are murderers, are thugs. They cannot be contained. Okay, the mood over in Brussels is somber and fearful. I mean, if you look at some of the photographs, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, you've probably seen them. You've probably seen more than I have, you know. But anyway, they're bloody. They are graphic. Sadness. People are sad. They're expressing their grief. You know, there's no doubt about it. It seems and appears that ISIS, the terrorist group from the Middle East, the thugs, it seems as if they're more sophisticated than ever. I believe that they've lit up, I think in Paris, they've lit up the Eiffel Towers, lit up in, you know, to reflect the mood of the people. Yeah, I think that's what happened. It reflects the mood of it. And it's just awful the way that this keeps happening, okay, with ISIS. It's just terrible. You know, and a lot of people are fearful. They're on alert. I mean, even in the United States, there's more foot patrols in the airports. There's bomb-sniffing dogs running around, you know. And whenever something happens in another country that's devastating, like a terrorist attack, the United States over here, we start to actually become a little bit more vigilant as well. Because this is crazy. This is crazy. And I'm talking about this, folks, because, you know, this is what's on my mind. Not talking about some book. Not talking about some sexual orgasms. Maybe that could be at another time, another day. But that is not what I want to talk about today. I didn't realize that she was going to be talking like that. So I thought maybe she was going to be talking about more about authors and stuff. But, you know, that. We don't need that. All right, we're talking about the, as everybody else, the terrorist attacks in Brussels. Everybody's covering it. So I want to make sure that I cover it on this show. George, why are you talking about it? Because it's news, okay? It's news, and this show is basically political commentary and opinion. Every now and then I will have an author on the show talking about his or her books. But for today, I don't think that's should be necessary for me to do that. And I want to express my sincere thoughts to those who have been hurt over in Brussels. My thing is, ISIS has to be taken out. They got to be taken out. I don't profess to be knowing everything there is to know about ISIS and foreign policy. I see the violence caused. I see the carnage that they cause. And this doesn't make sense to me. You know, and I see people walking around as if nothing happened. People have to be vigilant. If it can happen in Brussels, if it can happen in France, it can happen in modern-day America. America. And it's real, folks. It is real. I'm looking at photographs here from the internet. And Belgium was left reeling on Tuesday after two attacks targeting the airport and the subway station in the capital killed at least 31 people and left nearly 200 wounded. In a message distributed via the news media agency, the self-described Islamic State claimed responsibility for the attacks. Muslims. And I do not mean that in a negative way, but it always seems like it's always Muslims. At least it's coming from a Muslim state. Okay, Belgium was already on high alert after a key suspect in November's Paris attacks was captured in Brussels last week. I remember I saw the video of that. It was dramatic, raising questions as to whether the city could have foreseen and prevented Tuesday's tragedy. It's possible. quoting here, hate and extremism have hit in Brussels, unquote. Man, this is terrible. This is terrible. And Brussels totally is an ally of the United States. This is terrible. You know, I wanted to talk about some things today, but I knew after this had happened, I was telling my son this morning before he left out to go to school what was happening, because I know this is going to be a topic of spoken about in some of his classes. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure it's going to be spoken about in a lot of schoolrooms around the country, you know, because our kids, they have to also know how to be vigilant and how to spot something that may not look right or something that may be a little bit out of the norm and how to report that, you know. So it's just terrible that things are happening. I mean, there's so many things I want to talk about. I want to talk about Mason Featherstone. I want to talk about that because Mason Featherstone is a fictional character in one of my stories. So Mason Featherstone is not a real person, at least from my standpoint. I'm pretty sure there's some Mason Featherstone around the world someplace. But in my book, in my stories, Mason Featherstone is a fictional character, and he's one of my favorite characters of all the characters I have invented, of all the characters that I have created in my work. He is the my favorite, and he's one of my latest characters. He's a new character, actually, and a lot of my work from now to whenever basically is going to be based on Mason Featherstone. Because instead of a novel writer, I'm becoming a short story writer for my own reasons, okay? For my own reasons. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting live out of Chicago. Thank you so much for staying with me. Thank you so much for being there. Thank you for your understanding. And I'm a little somber today. I am, because of the attacks in Brussels, that the attack. So we're going to be talking about that basically for the duration of the show. 347-857-1762. That is my number. Only listen to me, folks. I know you're probably going to divert from that, but try to only listen to me. You miss the show here, you will miss a hell of a lot. I have at least 1 million listeners and callers sometimes all over the world. This show gets calls from all over the world, because if you're on the internet at any point, you know, you are all over the world, all over the world. I get calls from Africa, India. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And like I said, I've been on the show almost 2 years, and a lot of people out there know about the George Wilder Jr. Show, and a lot of people do listen and download and archive the show for later and listen later. It's a great show. All right, we're going to be right back, ladies and gentlemen. I will be right back. Stay with me. Okay, they're saying that the U.S. is on high alert after Belgium attacks. I would think so. I would totally think so. To be high alert, they're explaining on how, you know what, this to me, this Belgium attack, this reminds me, or it could even rival 9/11. Totally, I think it has outpaced the Paris attacks, you know, but this attack here rivals a 9/11. Even though in 9/11, the buildings came crumbling down, and I believe 3,000 people were killed. And some people were saying, well, no, it's not 9/11. But I'm just talking about the damage and the carnage and the blood. Whether it rivals 9/11 or not, it is still awful, folks. It's just awful. And it does take some of the sting out of my show. It takes some of the sting out of me to know that so many people are suffering. So many people have been killed or hurt over some nonsense because people want to come into your country and blow things up. And this is what I've always said. The terrorists, they always going to places that they want to blow up, making sure that those places are filled with people, like airports, the subway, train stations, malls. Make sure, because when they take themselves out, they are suicide bombers. They take themselves out, they want to take out as many people as possible with them. It's just crazy. The world has gone nuts. I mean, we got Donald Trump. We have gotten besides ourselves. The United States has sunken so low on the world stage. It's crazy. We're at the bottom of the heap. We got Donald Trump. We had Ben Carson. I don't know. Politically, I think the United States is going backwards. We are going backwards. You know, so we have to do something. I've got a little luster has been taken out of me because of the terrorist attacks. I feel I have a heart and I feel so bad for those people over there in Brussels. Innocent people going about their way, not bothering anybody. All of a sudden, a blast here, a blast there, and lots of people are dead. Then you got ISIS, who saying that it was us who did this. I mean, I think the world, the United States and its allies, I believe, I'm pretty sure some other people believe, I don't think we should stop until we eliminate ISIS altogether. ISIS, what is ISIS? That's not a military. They're just a gang of rogue ass killers in black. That's all they are. They're a rogue nation. They're rogue killers. We should not stop with our allies. We should not stop. We should not rest until ISIS is completely eliminated. They have to be taken out. Do not rest on your morals. And that's what happened here. The United States and some of our allies thought that ISIS was no longer a big threat. I don't think they eliminated ISIS being a threat at all. But somebody was caught sleeping here, just like we were caught sleeping Pearl Harbor. Somebody was caught sleeping here. You cannot get caught sleeping, because if you're caught sleeping, that's when things are going to happen. And if you're caught sleeping, you're going to be totally, totally unexpected. This is going to be totally, totally unexpected. And people are going to die. We always have to stay vigilant. Stay vigilant. Or you're going to die. You know what I'm saying? Okay, like I said before, I'm going to be talking about ISIS in some parts of the day, but I do want to play this clip on Chicago violence and living in fear, because that's what Brussels and some people in Paris are doing right now. They're living in fear. They're afraid. And here in the United States, some people in the United States are afraid. It's a shame when we can't walk to the store and we got to look behind us, look on the side of us, look down to make sure that we're not going to be blown up in the next minute. It's a shame when you have to walk out of the house not knowing if you're going to return. So here's that clip. I'm going to play some of it. I'm not going to play all of it. Living in fear.
Major funding for NPT Reports Domestic Violence is provided by Waller, supporting the legal needs of Nashville's business community for more than 100 years. Time and again, our clients come for the lawyer, but stay for the firm. The First Tennessee Foundation, dedicated to strengthening the vital signs of our healthy communities. The Women's Fund of the Community Foundation of Middle Tennessee, dedicated to transforming the lives of women and girls and improving the well-being of our entire community. And members of NPT, thank you.
She didn't want to talk.
This program
about
contains real and dramatized violent content, which may be too intense for some viewers. Parental and viewer discretion is advised.
What we hear all the time is, "You swept me off my feet." Usually they are the most charming man you've ever wanted to meet. They reel you in. I never knew anybody like him. My mother loved him. My father loved him. One of the things we talk about is push for quick involvement. You meet these guys, they sweep you off your feet, and 2 months later you're married. We have this excessive charm. And then we have the beginnings. And it's insidious. It starts slowly. "I love you so much that I want to be with you every second. Yeah, I want to go to the grocery store with you. I don't want to be away from you. I love you. You're beautiful. Don't go to work. I'll make enough money. Stay home." It sounds like what we love. Women want it. We want to be loved that way. And then it turns into, "Why are you at the grocery store within 20 minutes? You're not going to the grocery store." It turns into something else.
In the beginning, he made me feel beautiful, young, loved, cherished, and I just, that was something that I hadn't really felt very much in my life.
It seemed like he was always there when I needed someone, always put a smile on my face when I didn't have one, when I was going through a real rough time. He was there for a shoulder for me to lean on. When I met my husband, he was so charming. He was warm. He was very gentle. And he just catered to everything I wanted. He was romantic. I fell for that.
We're familiar with the headlines. Violent crimes happening in our community. Stabbings, shootings. However, more than half of the violent crimes occurring in Tennessee are not happening between strangers. Rather, the threats, the injuries, and homicides are being committed by the person who says, "I love you." Domestic violence is not arguments that escalate out of control. It's one partner in an intimate relationship asserting control over the other. It's about power and control. Here in Tennessee, the numbers and severity are far greater than the national average. Our state ranks third in the nation for the rate at which women are killed by men and has ranked in the top five for several years. This is a public safety crisis, according to Governor Haslam, because there is no typical victim of domestic violence. Statistics tell us we all could be vulnerable.
Abusive relationships start out like all relationships. If you were going to go out with someone for the first time and they reached over and they hit you in the face, you probably wouldn't want to go out with that person again. sometimes it's almost too good at the beginning of an abusive relationship. The person may be buying their partner flowers or calling them a lot, texting them a lot, checking in on them, and it feels really good.
Domestic violence is an escalating pattern of abuse in which one partner establishes control through force, intimidation, or the threat of violence. This relationship has predictable phases, as shown in the cycle of violence. There's a period of tension building, followed by an acute explosion, and then the apologetic honeymoon.
In an abusive relationship, the next part of the cycle after the honeymoon is what we call tension building. And that's where the partner may start to just let you know that they're in the control of the situation.
Do you want me to call in?
No, I said I'll take care of it, so I'll take care of it, all right?
They might start telling you what to wear or where you could go, who you can see.
You understand me?
Yes, I do.
They might limit the victim's control over their lives in subtle ways that the victim might not recognize right at first. And then what happens is we come to what's called the explosion or the outburst. And at that point, there may be hitting, there may be yelling, there may be screaming.
I'm really sorry.
You're really sorry. You know what's really sorry? You're really sorry. Sorry. Who's always sorry? You're the one who's always sorry, aren't you? Huh?
If I were the victim, I might say to my partner, you know, nobody's ever done that to me before. If you do that to me again, I'm going to leave you. And then what happens is my partner says to me, oh, I'm so sorry, baby. I love you so much. I promise I won't do it again. I won't let it happen again. Please just give me another chance. And here we are back at the honeymoon. And we may stay in that part of the cycle for a while. It could be a few minutes. It could be a few months. It could be even longer than that. Basically, the abuser is going to keep the victim in the honeymoon part of the cycle again as long as they need to keep them in the relationship.
Valerie Nguyen has worked in the field of domestic violence for 17 years. She is the founder and chief executive officer of Mary Parish Center in Nashville. In its first 9 years, the center provided a myriad of life-saving non-residential services to more than 6,000 victims of domestic and sexual violence. In 2009, the center significantly shifted its focus to become the largest single-site therapeutic transitional housing program in Tennessee. Women and their children are provided cost-free housing for up to 2 years.
The average victim takes 7 times before she leaves for good. She leaves, she goes back, she leaves, she goes back. And in the years I've done this work, I'm often asked, why? Because we love them. Because they're charming. Because they made us feel beautiful and wonderful like no one we've ever known. And because after they hurt us, they are the most contrite. And they sob and they beg, and we're the mother of their children, and we want a family, and so we go back. They'll have what we call the honeymoon phase, where everything's lovely. Then the violence starts again, and almost always it's worse than it was when she left the first time. The whole thing's escalated, and now he's going to punish you for the fact that you left.
There are occasions where our victims of domestic violence tell us that their batterer has actually taken them to the hospital for them to receive treatment, waited with them while they were taken care of, and brought them back home. And then the honeymoon starts all over again. I heard a client say once that her batterer bought her a car, and things went well for a while in the relationship after that, but she was abused again at a later time.
There was a lot of personality change for me because I tried to change the way I was because I thought I was the cause of the abuse, so if I changed the way I was, maybe he wouldn't hit me. Maybe he wouldn't scream at me or call me these ugly names that he used to call me or do the things that he used to do, and I changed a lot. I used to be a bubbly, outgoing person, and I became very depressed and sour and serious, and I lost me.
Manitou.
Isolation is one of the big deals. So I'm going to isolate you. But pretty much you have to think, if I wanted to have complete control over you, what kind of things would I have to do? Well, first of all, I'm going to take away your car. You're not going to have friends or family around you because I want all of your attention. You most likely are not allowed to have a job. If you do have a job, it's monitored when you leave, when you come home. All the money's given there because financial control. If I'm going to control you, you know, I don't want you to have money. I don't want you to have gas in your car.
When I do look back, I find that there were indicators. I am very passive, and with him, as soon as I married him, his whole disposition changed with me. Immediately I became owned, and he said so right there as soon as the I do's were done. Said, now you're my wife, now you need to act like my wife. But as time went on, just little bits of comments, small areas of isolation, then complete isolation.
I think one thing we see a lot is in cell phone usage, someone pulling the phone away and checking that phone and just kind of scrolling through and asking, who is this call from? Who is this? That's not acceptable. We have a right to our cell phones and our cell phone usage and not expect we're going to be interrogated. It's very critical to have friendships outside of the realm of that intimate partner relationship. If that person is constantly demanding all of your time and not wanting you to go out and have friends or, moreover, even have relationships with your family, then that is another example of an unhealthy boundary, and we certainly have to have those relationships. It's important for life.
We used to give out little cards to women to say the characteristics of abuser. But before I gave out the card, I'd say, let me tell you about Joe. And I'd start telling her, you're with a garden variety abuser. And that's a very important thing to say to a domestic violence victim because it takes the burden off her. It lets her know it wasn't you. He would have done this with anybody. You just happened to be at the right place at the wrong time. And we oftentimes see, and this is fascinating, a woman will call a woman and say, you're going out with Joe. He used to be married to me. Get away from him. He's going to hurt you. Happens all the time. And he does hurt them, which is why I end up meeting them. So we have this repetitive behavior with both the victim and the abuser.
The National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey finds 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men will experience severe physical violence by an intimate partner at some point in their lifetimes.
When we work with a victim of domestic violence and she begins to explain to us the dynamics and the roles that exist in their home and in their relationship, it becomes very clear that there is very rigid thinking and very unrealistic expectations and stereotypes that exist in the mind of a batter. It's very black and white. A batter often believes that that victim is there to serve them and to supply all the emotional needs and all the happiness that he feels like he deserves, or in some cases she feels that she deserves. And it's really hard to meet that mark.
A lot of times people will ask you, what did you do wrong when it comes to the behavior of your husband? And it's so easy for people to say you deserved it or you made him act like that. No. If I have to say this about myself, I was an honest wife. I loved my husband. I loved my children. I cared for everything about where we were and who we were as a family. His behavior was given to me slowly. I realized that he had issues from his past that he had not dealt with. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'll just love you out of this, you know, because I care for you just that much. And it wasn't enough. The love wasn't enough.
I couldn't understand how somebody could say that they love you and turn around and hit you. So I always felt like that it must have been something that I was doing to provoke this anger in him. his phrase with me always was, "You have the most beautiful face I've ever seen. I could look at you forever." And he turned around at one point and punched me in the face and broke my nose.
My first marriage didn't work out, and, you know, so, you know, it must be me, you know. That's what I thought. It had to be me. Couldn't be both of them. It had to be me.
It's not just about being hit. It's the words. It's the mean words. I'm going to degrade you until I think you are low enough. It's the money. Here, take this $20 and make it last all week. It's the children. You better not leave these children here with me. It's your sexual relationship. Forced sex. Maybe no sex. Communication with the outside world. My husband broke my phone. He ran over it. He threw it in the ditch. So when I had to call my mom or my sister, I had to beg him for his phone. And he would stand right there, listening to me talk. And of course, conversations are short, not long and laughy like they used to be, but short and quick and off. Because his thing was, nobody needs to know what's going on in my house.
He started getting verbal, call a bitch, and then it just, you know, accelerate up and up and up from that, if you can only imagine, you know, being called something worse than that. You know, down, that degrades you. From the start of the abuse, I started feeling bad about myself. It was basically just go to work, come home. He had a problem because I made more money than he did. So I used to hear that a lot in the verbal abuse. Got so physical one time to the last time that, you know, I got kicked so much in my abdomen and thrown down the stairs that I started having very bad vaginal bleeding. And I'm still dealing with that today.
You can be controlled by the clothes that you are made to wear. You can be controlled with foods that you are allowed or not allowed to eat. You can be controlled by not being able to use your own vehicle or not having access to money in the family. There are so many ways that a person can be controlled that does not include physical violence.
My husband was a burner. He would burn things. And so, of course, we would leave the house and come back and things would be broken. Things would be burned, cut, you know, and I'm questioning him, why would you do this? Why would you destroy our things? Oh, I didn't do that. And he would have no remorse.
Generally, it starts with name calling. And then it's pushing. Sometimes it's I'll throw an object, but not at you, but close to you. The messages imply it could have been you. We then move in oftentimes to animal abuse, a lot of that. If you talk to any police officer who's worked a lot of domestic calls, they will tell you, you never go into a home where there's been a lot of domestic violence, where there's an old dog. You know why you never see old dogs? They don't live to be old dogs. I had a woman I worked with who had birds, and he killed every one of her birds in front of her. He never hit her. He didn't have to. He killed her birds and said to her each time, "This could be you."
The harsh reality.
All right, they're doing wall-to-wall coverage on the Brussels attacks, terrorist attacks. We're calling them terrorist attacks, folks, because that's what it is. And they're doing wall-to-wall coverage. I mean, I'm watching on one of the screens here, and it's 24/7 coverage on Brussels, and also Brussels and Brussels itself is having wall-to-wall coverage. You know, and from my understanding, one of the suspects. On the run, and there is a massive manhunt for this guy, a massive manhunt. And as I said earlier, I think ISIS, the United States and its allies should not stop hunting down ISIS until the entire network has been eliminated. Because you can't just go bombing strongholds that you think are strongholds of ISIS, thinking you've done something and you've done nothing. This was in the planning, probably, you know, more likely. And this is just awful. It's just totally awful that people are suffering, people are hurt, people are scared. You know, it's awful. The world has just torn itself apart. The world is just, you should read my book, Jesus Christ, Son of Man Returns. It has some of this in there about how crazy the world has become. And with Donald Trump, it's even crazier. And I'm just sad. I'm almost speechless of the violence that goes on in the United States, in Chicago, in Illinois, around the world. It's just never ending. It's surging out of control. The violence is just surging out of control. What can we do? The only thing we can do is, if we want to live, is to be vigilant. You know, to be vigilant. But sometimes you're not always vigilant. You forget to be vigilant and you let your guard down, and all of a sudden, hey, wow, something devastating can happen. This is just awful. This is just awful. It's just awful. Yeah, they're doing round-to-round wall-to-wall coverage of this, and rightly so. Rightly so, because I don't think anybody in America right now at this point do not know what has happened in Brussels. Maybe I should take that back. You got a lot of Americans probably don't know what just took in place in Brussels. You probably got a lot of them, you know. But that's, you know, that's not right. I think everybody should know something about this. And also I think people should educate their children on these types of things. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me right here. Follow me on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm all over the place. And I wanted to say something about the governor in Illinois, the state that I'm in. I don't know what his feelings are on what has taken place in Brussels, but I'm pretty sure he's probably saying the same thing, that even though he's a irritating man, he's probably saying the same thing as I'm saying, or that a lot of other people are saying, that it's a tragedy and you just have to pray for those who have been hurt, who have died. And hopefully this guy who is on the lam, who is now a fugitive and a suspect, let's hope this guy gets caught and the FBI, the federal government can find out what the hell is going on, you know. So it's a waiting game. It's a waiting game. And each and every, you know, minute, there's something new coming out of this. Something new coming out of this. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I wanted to talk about Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois. Let me refresh your memory in case you do not know what's going on in Illinois. I live in Chicago, and I'm proud. Bruce Rauner is the governor of Illinois. He's been the governor for about over a year. We've not had a budget in this town for 10 months. He's a slash-and-burn governor. Every program, I mean, he's a slash-and-burn. Every program, every essential program in the state of Illinois, he has slashed, he's burned. If there's a program that he hasn't gotten to yet, believe me, it's because of the courts. But he wants it. And every time he cuts a program, he comes on television and says, hey, Illinois does not have the money. But Bruce Rauner has a turnaround agenda that he wants. And what is included in his turnaround agenda is busting unions, getting rid of collective bargaining, making workplaces a right to workplace, meaning no unions. I mean, if you don't have a union, in some of these workplaces, the employer can just do what they want to you. They can fire you at will. They can lower your pay. So unions play a vital part, but somehow Bruce Brown does not like unions. I mean, he's a Republican. What can you say? All right? However, we have been without a budget for 10 months. 10 months. And I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel for us to have a budget. You know, we had an election on March 15th, the primaries. Bruce Rauner and his rich friends poured $9.2 million into that election, and they lost. And now Bruce Rauner is saying that the election was not a referendum on him. But I and some other people beg to differ. It was a referendum on him, and he lost. Mike Madigan won. Juliana Stratton won. These were people he didn't want, was trying to take out of office, out of the legislature, or to stop from winning altogether. He lost, and he's going around saying that this was not a referendum on him. It didn't mean anything. It meant everything. He's a rotten governor. He's cutting, slashing every program there is, throwing people out of work, throwing kids out of daycare. 70,000 kids have been thrown out in the street because of him. College and universities are shutting down. Students are being upended. They're going to either have to drop out of college or change colleges or whatever. But it is a big convenience. And when you ask him why he's doing this, the first thing he says is Illinois can't pay for it. But I can tell you this, Pat Quinn would have won re-election, this would not be happening in Illinois. Pat Quinn was not the best governor, but I can tell you this, this would not be happening in Illinois. The schools would be funded, including junior colleges and universities, they would be funded. And this was a total referendum on Bruce Rauner, and it's just not me saying it. It's the Chicago Times saying it. It's the Chicago Tribune saying it. It, the voters have said it. Other politicians, Republican and Democrats, have noted it. So why can't Bruce Rauner take it? He lost, plain and simple. But you know what? Politicians, they spin. I mean, they lie. They are twisted. Even when reality is staring these guys and girls completely in the face. So, you know, I have written about this and posted, you know, said some things. But, you know, I mean, be a man, Bruce Rauner. Accept your defeat. Acknowledge it. Maybe you should apologize. I mean, Bruce Rauner is a first-term governor. He's never held an office before in his life, and he went up against Mike Madigan, who's been in a House of Representatives for 45 years. And ask anybody in this town, newspaperman, politician, you know, the voters of his district. Michael Madigan, he's a winner, and he knows how to take out his opponent. He took out Bruce Rauner twice. Twice. Bruce Rauner, he put up some candidates to run against Michael Madigan, a candidate to run against he put more money into this representative. Now, without a job, Ken Duncan, because he was voted out. You know, Ken Duncan was an idiot, but he was taking Rauner money, and he was voting with the Republicans, and he had his ass voted out, and this was a referendum on that. So Bruce Rauner cannot go around the state saying that this was not a referendum on that, because majority of the people that he's saying these things to, they're going to say, stop lying, Bruce. Bruce, you're spinning. It was. Now, let's just say if Bruce had have won this election, he'd have been all in awe. He would have replaced Michael Madigan, and he would have retained Ken Duncan, and he would have been all up in his, you know, whatever, bragging about it. But now the tables have turned. He's saying to himself, this was not a referendum on me. Bruce Rauner doesn't know anything about politics. He doesn't know how to govern. He doesn't know how to compromise. He's one of these guys to say, hey, it's my way or get out of the way. It's my way or you're fired. It's my way or the highway. This is what he is. I want this. I want that. I want to do this. I want that. Get out of my way. But however, this is a democratic town. We have a democratic house in the state legislature. We have a House of Representatives, a Democratic House of Representatives in the state legislature in Illinois. And he's a first-time politician, period. Mike Madigan is teaching and showing him something. He should learn. Stop trying to get voters to, in a negative way, get voters to throw Madigan out. The only person that's going to be thrown out is Bruce Rauner. Of course, Bruce, I agree. I totally agree. I think Michael Madigan has been in office too long, 45 years. That's a hell of a long time. I think if I was Mike Madigan, I'd live out my last years probably in Hawaii or somewhere on the island of Jamaica or Barbados or something out in the Caribbean, you know. 45 years in the state legislature in Illinois, that's a long time. But you know what? He's a winner, and people like that. Bruce Rauner had some guy going against Michael Madigan by the name of Joseph Gonzalez. And a lot of people are saying he's got a Hispanic name, but he's not a Hispanic. So they figuring that a lot of people in Michael Madigan's districts were Hispanic. So they were supposed to turn against Mike Madigan and vote for the guy with the Hispanic sounding name. That did not happen. And Joseph Gonzalez was funded with Republican money, friends of Bruce Rauner. And Gonzalez was crushed. He was smashed. So Rauner has to come to the realization it was a referendum on him. And him trying to lie about this is just make people look at him in more of a negative way than they had before. Nobody likes Bruce Rauner. I don't believe that people on his side likes him. I don't believe people who are Republicans, and he's a Republican, I don't think they admire him at all. I know Democrats and African Americans and Hispanics do not care anything for Bruce Rauner. If he decides to run for re-election in 2018, I believe it's 2018, if he decides to run for re-election, he's out. He's out of a job. As far as I'm concerned, Bruce Rauner is a failed governor of Illinois, and a lot of people are saying that. I mean, if you go to social media and you go to Bruce Rauner or wherever, it's all negative for Bruce Rauner. You might find one or two people who are for him, or they're just being facetious in what they're saying. But majority of people do not like Bruce Rauner. I can go even further. Some of them, they despise Bruce Rauner, you know, and that's not good. That is not good. I mean, when you're not liked, it's hard for you to try to govern. You need to be liked. I think what Bruce Rauner was hoping for in this election, this primary election, March 15th, I think what he was hoping for is that people would not get out and vote, because he knows that if progressives don't vote or refuse to vote, then that's a vote for a Republican. However, that did not happen. People came out in droves. They came out against Bruce Rauner. Bruce Rauner had all kinds of ads and attacks of other candidates up here running on television every day. And we all know Bruce Rauner. Bruce Rauner had destroyed the state, or trying to destroy it, in droves to vote. And they did vote. They rejected Ken Duncan, a Democrat who sided with Rauner, a Democrat that took Rauner's money, a Democrat that got an infusion of Rauner's money day before the election. So we have a problem in Illinois. We have a Republican governor who is taking this state down the tubes. He's cut everything. However, I keep saying how he's cut, because the reason why he's cutting is he's saying the state doesn't have the money. And every day this state goes without a budget, the deeper in debt it goes. All Rauner has to do to get this state out of debt is to sign a budget. Schools will be funded. A lot of the colleges and the universities will be funded. But he claims that the state doesn't have the money. However, Rauner has a turnaround agenda. And that turnaround agenda includes busting unions. And he has said many times, if his turnaround agenda is included in that budget, he would sign it. He would sign it. It's like, well, Michael Madigan, you want something? You want a budget? I want something. I want to bust unions. We have to wash each other's back. And Michael Madigan said, no, I'm not going to let you up in the middle class. Rauner says, well, then you don't get a budget. So what is this talk about Rauner always saying that the state doesn't have the money to pay its bills? But then again, if Michael Madigan approves his turnaround agenda, it would be a budget. In other words, he's holding the state hostage. He's destroying the state. And it's, folks, it's not just me saying that. It's the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Sun-Times, I'm pretty sure there's other papers saying the same thing. But Bruce Rauner is saying, hey, wow, that was no referendum on me or my policies. He has no policies. He has no issues. The man hasn't done anything for this state. He has butchered this state. He has gutted this state. All right, so you're listening to George Wilder Jr. on the George Wilder Jr. Show. And like I said, one more time, I want to say send some prayers out to the people of Brussels. As I've said, noted before, there has been a terrorist attack, 3 explosions from what I understand. And it's just got to stop. This has got to stop. This has to stop. It has to stop. All right, folks.
Father,
Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We just got a few more minutes into the show. And let me see. What's this? Okay. I'm looking at something here, and it says the landlord welcomes dogs but not Muslims. Let's see. Yeah, it says that's got to be something. I mean, that's not right. You know, the Muslims, every time there's a Muslim attack, these guys get a bad break. I mean, did this even, you know, cause the innocent Muslims to wonder, you know? And I have a mosque near my studio here. Yes, right down the street. You know, Muslims go there and they pray or read the Quran or this, but they're peaceful. They're peaceful people, and I'm gonna still say this. I don't think all Muslims should be equated or put in the same basket as, you know, the terrorist. Okay, and majority of the time, the terrorists are Muslims, but I don't think that should happen. So, let me see if I can do this. Yeah. I don't think all Muslims should be put in the same basket, you know. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Join me tomorrow, folks, on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We start at 6 o'clock, and my guest will be Debbie Rapolo. I'm pretty sure she's an author. Okay. All right, folks. I've had a great time today. The author on my show was Antonia Hall. Somehow we were cut off, and she didn't call back. So, you know, we have to move on. Okay, I want to thank everybody for listening to the show, downloading this show, archiving this show, your positive feedback on this show. And I hope you guys join me tomorrow at 6. It will be another great show, folks. All right, you missed a show here. You will miss a lot. All right, bye-bye. Take care, everybody. See you tomorrow.